Hey, everybody, welcome back to another illustrious episode of the Oversharing Show, the best darn show on the internet. I've realized that I probably used the same adjectives a few times, so I had to switch them up a little bit. We're going with
illustrious.
Illustrious. Illuminating, even. Illuminating. Am I right, everyone? Anyway, we're really excited about our returning guest today. Excuse me, but before we get into that, we're going to read today's quote. Actually, Sharon's going to read today's quote, and I'm going to pull a card.
Indeed. This quote is by Friedrich Nietzsche, and it says, "There are two different types of people in the world, those who want to know and those who want to believe." Or shall we say, those who want to know and those who want to believe. I really, really like that. It's very thought-provoking.
Yeah, it reminds me of the different personality types that we have also that we've been discussing a lot with our good friend Joe behind the scenes. But our guest today, I'm going to bring him in really quick to see if he has any thoughts on the quote. But our guest today is Nick. He's no stranger to anyone who's a fan of this show.
And he thinks he's an INFP. Sorry to interrupt.
He's an INFP. No problem. What do you think about that quote there, Nick?
I think I believe that I am an INFP. That's what I think. No, I like that quote a lot. I like quotes like that, which break it down into a false binary on purpose. It makes you think a lot more. When you simplify things, it's like a weird thing that happens where you think that you wouldn't think as much, but you do. You think a lot more when you simplify.
Absolutely. And I like how you said the false binary, because it's like there are only two types of people in the world.
Yeah.
And you've seen those funny memes. Those are funny.
I love them. Yep.
Yeah.
I can't think of a good one, so I didn't say.
I also, hang on, I'm gonna look back at this quote again, but I love how it's like want, and it uses the word want to know and want to believe. Yes. So it really makes you think about, like, it's not saying that there's only people who believe and people who think, right?
Or no.
Step behind it. Anyway.
Let's see. You want to look at it?
Oh, I'll bring it.
I'm just looking at it. Two different types of people in the world, those who want to know and those who want to believe. So, knowing is something Brandon and I have talked about since one of the early episodes, and I kind of broke it down. Like, I had heard someone say before that, like, you see in the Bible, like, Adam knew his wife Eve, and you don't know someone unless you've experienced it. So he experienced his wife, and so knowledge comes from experience. So those who want to know, I'm assuming in this case, is those who want to experience something to have the knowledge. And then you have the people who want to believe, and to me that would just be a blind belief of, like, you know, well, I believe, without actually truly having the experience to know that it actually is true and valid for you or whatever.
Yeah, it's like they don't want to actually have the experience. They just want to have the knowing without the experience, right? They're taking someone else's word for it.
Exactly.
We get so deep on this Oversharing show.
So with that said, and with the note that Nick said he believes he's an INFP, it's probably because he hasn't yet delved in deep to the MBTI to actually experience all the detail behind it, because it is very detailed. And I've been actually trying to dive in a little bit, and Joe is mind-blowingly leagues ahead of me on this, but he'll explain things to me and I'm just like, whoa, like, that there's so many levels to this that, but until I can really pinpoint and say, you know, these are the exact cognitive functions that you were using right now, and that's what makes you an INFP, right? But I can't know that until I've actually studied the person and their language and their behavior to know exactly what they are representing.
I'm glad that you said that last word there, representing, because I was going to say that as well.
Wow.
I said, I believe I am, first off, because I don't know nearly as much as you guys do about it. I've looked at personality types before, and like INFP does read like a biography of me. But then I also go, is it reading who I actually am, or just who I am right in this moment based on all of my traumas, all of my everything that I choose to put out into the world? And, you know, a lot of people don't stop and really think about that. Are you, like, if you're taking one of those personality type tests, are you basing your answers on the little quizzes on who you really are, or the person that you project into the world? It's pretty fascinating. It's a lot deeper than people really think about.
Absolutely. And to the point you were saying about like who I am, or who I, like, you know, after all these traumas, who I am now, blah, 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 right? I also had the same thoughts about those kinds of things. And I'm coming to see that if you've healed a lot of the things that cause the quote negative type of behaviors, it doesn't make you not an INFP. Let's just say that you were, right? That we had determined all the examples and said, yeah, this is very much 99.9% accuracy that he's an INFP. Then it would manifest a little differently based on how much healing you've done. But you'd still be an INFP. It would just be harder to identify you as an INFP because of all the changes that you've made. So,
yeah, totally.
It also depends on like the model that you're looking on, because this, just like anything else, there's like a mainstream approach to it where you don't get all this stuff and they try to just like herd people into different categories. And then there's a more, just a different look at it, I guess. Like C.S. Joseph is one of these guys, but he's following someone else's work. I can't remember exactly.
He takes a lot of people's work. C.S. Joseph has taken a lot of people's work and kind of merged together. And then sometimes he changes the terminology. So, and sometimes he doesn't explain that he's done that. So it's hard to tell sometimes, but yeah, he's gone very deep. But yes, like you said, there's a lot of people looking at this from different kind of, a little bit different angles, and then they'll change the names and terminologies of things. So yeah, it depends on what you're looking at in that regard too.
And I think also that the misidentification comes in is just what Nick said, because people answer the questions based on the best version of themselves. Like they're trying to just impress people or whatever it is, you know, and the way that C.F. Joseph, I guess, teaches it, or other people teach it too, is that you can, by people's actual behavior, you could, like, by the way they talk and the phrases that they use, you can usually type them. Yeah.
And using other people's observations, not just your biased observation of yourself.
Yeah.
And the fact that when you have, you know, like, let's say you're an INFP, or let's just use me as an example, because I'm allegedly, from everything that I've looked into, I'm an ENTJ. Now, I need to like have evidence to prove it, but I haven't done that yet, but allegedly. So there are shadow aspects of the ENTJ, and those manifest as other personalities. So like my the next one, which I think is the subconscious, is an INTP, which is Brandon. And that's funny because it's probably why we probably get along, because like he's basically my shadow.
Yeah, and I think it works.
My shadow function.
The other way around, because Joe was telling me about that. So you would be my shadow function as well, which, and I brought this up too, and we've talked about this on the show, where I feel like we might not get along if we both hadn't done work on ourselves, because the way that we could be opposite in certain ways.
Right.
Since we did work and we're not victims as much as we used to be. I think that we're able to work better because of that, and we can understand each other now. Because I think before, if you have something in your shadow, generally it's something you deny about yourself, right? Or something that you're not all right with. So you might see it out in the world and you might criticize it because it's like a classic projection, right? So that
might judge it, right?
Yeah. And that would be a reason why we wouldn't get along if we both were, slobs. No. You know what I mean? The profane. Now, if we both weren't, didn't do some work and take a look at our victim status and all that stuff. So
I feel like we're doing an intro to our MBTI episode, which maybe one day we'll do.
Yeah, it's like a preview. Yeah, we'll get Joe on once he's ready, because he said he went hardcore into that. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, me too.
Awesome. Well, I pulled a tarot card, so we should probably talk about that. In the deck I'm using today here, I'm going to highlight myself so everybody could see. I'm using the Influence of the Angel tarot, which I really recommend for anyone that has a Christian kind of background, which most listeners to the show have. And or if you're into Christ or whatever, because it has a lot of the same archetypes with the angels and stuff. Let me see if I can block this light. The lighting in here is too good, I guess, guys. Sorry. All right. So anyway, 10 of wands. See, it's a guy holding a bunch of wands. Look like match sticks, like large match. And then there's an angel over there off to the side. Some nice shading. There you go. 10 of wands. All right. Back. Yeah, I really like this this deck. It's really cool. We've used it in the past, but it's been a while.
Yeah, tens are about kind of like completion, right? Right before you start new things.
Yeah, it's like the end of a cycle a lot of times. I mean, I could even read what it says in here if you want. Let's do it. Because sure. This book is really good.
Wands are about fire, about action.
Yeah, creation, all that fun stuff. All right, so 10 of wands. Tens take the intrinsic meaning of the suit and show it in abundance. Symbols, wands. So it's going to talk about all the symbols in here. So the wands represent commitments, activities, projects, or anything else that requires someone's attention and energy. Because there are so many, they also represent burdens. Generally, wands represent energy. Energy is most effective when it's concentrated and less effective when it's dispersed. Just because there's more of it in quantity doesn't automatically mean it's more powerful and effective. In this context, the wands represent the man's energy capacity and what he's able to expend on each wand, commitment, activity, or project. The man is quite adept at handling the 10 wands, and he has enough energy to carry them all. This represents the capacity to take on multiple responsibilities and the abilities to manage life's burdens. But perhaps that man has taken on too much. He can't see the road ahead and has perhaps lost sight of his ultimate destination. Additionally, he can't give too much focused attention to each individual wand, commitment, activity, or project, because there are too many of them. Each situation is maintained, but they're not necessarily thriving. Distraction can occur when too much is going on, and the reason why something was originally taken on, the motivating spark, is often forgotten. The road, path, or action a person takes to reach a goal or to get something done. The road also symbolizes intention and purpose. The wall defines, helps define the path, represents a way to stay undistracted and focused. House in the distance, it represents the destination or the goal. The direct meaning, the ability to handle many things at once, involved with multiple projects or activities, managing life's responsibilities. Being so caught up in doing something that you forget why you're doing it. All right. In doing, let's see, involved in, with many things, but doing none of them well, the need to focus on just one thing. So it has multiple different meanings, and then it gives a shadow meaning here. Stop and smell the roses. The angelic message, which is the final thing, lighten your load so that you may see the path more clearly. Interesting.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. As always, that is spot on with a lot of the stuff that I have to talk about today. So I just am smiling because it's every time I come on here, the card that gets pulled is like, it's like the basis of what I come on to talk about, which is hilarious. And today let's talk about trauma again. Woo. And childhood trauma, and more specifically, I was talking to Sharon and we thought it would be a good idea to have this conversation. I think it's going to be incredibly fun to kind of delve into some of the reasons why people get wrapped up in, for lack of a better term, cults. And those could be in person or online. What is actually happening on like a subconscious level that drives somebody to get involved in that? So you guys have any thoughts, go for it. If not, I'll lay out my hypothesis and then we can just
Oh, you're muted, Sharon. Sharon, you're muted.
Sorry, I was just going to mention quickly that we all wore green today and we did not plan this.
Yes, we did. Which is funny because we're going to be talking about childhood trauma, and we will be talking about how healing that trauma is imperative to getting out of a cult and making sure that you don't get duped into joining another one. And that involves healing. And in all, you know, Eastern, whatever, Eastern medicine, Eastern religion, everything, green is the heart chakra, and it's all about healing. So
yes,
things are lining up again, guys, as they do every time we talk.
What a surprise. I did want to mention before we get started on the topic of cults that the way that I view cults is really, you know, if you look at the word culture, and I'm sure some people are familiar with this though, but culture and cult, it's pretty much the same thing. Cult's just like a shortening of it. And we have this culture, right, around our collective consciousness. So most people in the United States have an idea of all the same kind of things. You know, it used to be a little different. I remember in the 90s when I would travel around, like when I was in the Marines and stuff, it was different places that you went. But now when you go, I mean, there's still a lot of differences, but a lot of people talk very similar now. And, you know, there's a lot of the same restaurants and corporations and all this stuff everywhere. A lot of the same music tastes and stuff like that, whereas it used to be a little different. So when I talk about things like cult and cult culture, really what we're talking about is just a way for people to interact in society in a certain way. So with what comes along with that is like jargon and different words and different traditions, I guess you could say, and customs and all these things that we do. And
ideologies.
You know, yeah, ideologies.
Dogmas.
Yeah, behaviors for sure, right? And when we're talking about cults and internet cults, what happens I see sometimes is people, not just the big culture, they'll throw that away and then they adopt their own culture outside of that culture. It's kind of counterculture. And that's when it becomes a cult. And I think the reason that they're demonized so heavily is because that they compete with the big culture. And I'm not saying cults are a good thing by any means, but I don't think it's a bad thing to get out of the culture or to be against the culture, or maybe, you know, like as Jesus says, you're of the world, or you're in the world, not of it, right? You want to be, yeah, there you go. That's it. And so that's kind of all I wanted to say about internet cults. The reason why I sure we all see the issues here is that the some of the behavior can become negative or
toxic.
Or toxic to the people involved. Yeah. And it just really causes more division. And what are we against here more than anything else on the Oversharing Show? division. We've been talking about it for years now, literally. I could say that. So, yeah, I just wanted to give a little definition of kind of what we mean. Yeah, go ahead, Sharon, if you want to say
something. I have a little caveat about your word division.
Yeah.
You know, because Jesus said, I came to bring a sword, right? So, and he doesn't mean it in a harmful way, because the truth divides, right? So when we say we're against division, we mean the type that is that has animosity, is angry and trying to fight with each other, trying to have arguments and debates and discussions. You know, that's the kind that we dislike, because it's not productive. When Jesus said he came to bring a sword, which divides, it's that when we speak truth, the people who dislike truth will be upset. And that's all he meant. So that we're not talking about that kind of division.
Or could it even be that he meant, you know, that's definitely one way, because you're totally right about speaking truth. But could it also have been, I bring a sword for you to cut yourself away from this with the truth? Because a lot of times with the truth, you have to be quiet, because it is one of the most offensive things ever. And you don't want to end up on a cross, right? So,
yeah, so, I think it's because Jesus said, I came not to bring peace, but a sword. I sent something like that.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm just saying, if you look at the way, you know, just the way you can kind of esoterically, I guess, look at these words.
Yeah.
But also have that meaning if you apply it internally, right? Like a sword for you to sever your ties. And really all that can mean is just attachments, right? So you could still interact with people, but you don't have to be like, I'm the smartest one in this group. I know what's going on and they're going to know it too. You could just be like, hey, Uncle Brandon's over to hang out. What's going on, everybody? We went to the moon. It was cool. You know, like, sometimes you have to just step back and let things go. And I'm not saying you should lie or whatever, agree with it. You just remain silent, right? Those who know don't talk. Those who talk don't know. That's all I meant.
And just as a side note, the where Jesus says, not peace, but a sword, that whole thing is in Matthew 10, 34 to 36. I just did an online search. And Luke 12, 51, it appears to be. So that's what the internet's telling me right now. So.
Beautiful.
What the F is the internet?
No. Yeah, you guys, I appreciate what you guys just said, those caveats, and it's really true. I think the reason that cults never work, literally never, they work for a time and then they all eventually crumble and fall, is because they are so heavily invested in, as Sharon said, division, but then also, like Brandon touched on, 100% of the time they go from focusing on what they do like, you know, we're going to be counterculture. We don't like what the culture is doing, so we're going to create our own thing. And then typically within a matter of years, it's no longer about focusing on those good things that they want to prop up in their own culture, their own created culture. It's now everybody else is evil, and 100% of our energy goes into trying to convince everybody in the cult how evil everybody else is. This is usually done at the top, so that I, the leader of this cult, can become your new messiah. And it is, that's why they never work, because it's not about the actual culture being created. That's a farce. That's a facade. That is a show put on, to get eyes on the cult leader.
I wanted to just quickly say too, that it is very reminiscent of a narcissistic relationship, because it starts off, you know, oh, the good, the true and the beautiful. This is amazing. This is, we're all about goodness and about truth and about God and about whatever. Right. But over time it starts to deteriorate, and there's lots of gaslighting going on, lots of people going, but I thought, you know, I thought this was, so this is good. Is this what good is? Is this what beautiful is? Yep. And it's literally the narcissistic relationship, because the other person on the other side starts to question themselves. And sometimes if there's trauma that has not been healed, they will remain in the relationship thinking, I must be the crazy one. If, you know, this is supposed to be about good, true, and beautiful. Let's go back to that. Maybe if I stay, things will change and we'll go back to the good, the true, and the beautiful. But it's, again, it's like a narcissistic relationship. And if the trauma is not healed, the person will stay. It's all individual, each
100%. Person. Yeah. And it's that gaslighting that gets people to stay because they go, oh, well, the cult leader told me that there's something wrong with me because I enjoy X, Y, or Z. So obviously they know the answer to how I'm going to be able to heal myself from liking this thing that they have now deemed bad. So now I have to stay into this cult for, you know, however long so that I can get their divine wisdom of how to heal myself. And that is the root of what I wanted to speak about today. Right there. So I'm glad that you tied that in perfectly. Oh, awesome.
Really quickly, I wanted to add too, like, I think that some of these cults, they don't, they come along and they're not even planned. Like, I think a lot of this stuff happens spontaneously. It's kind of like the way that I view what's going on in the government, in the world and stuff. So many people think there are all these controllers in a dark room, every single thing that happens. Whereas I think it's human behavior that leads it. You know, like the news is fake, right? Everyone will say news is fake. Well, why is the news fake? Is it somebody saying that's what we should do? Or is what they do make the most amount of money because of greed and all this stuff? And the people that play ball rise to the top and all these things. So I think that even you want to call it a cult or whatever. This is the other thing I was going to say. I think people have kind of a wrong idea exactly of what a cult is and what it can be. It's not just all about like a place where you go and you're drinking the Kool-Aid and there's you know, like a David Koresh kind of guy or whatever. Well, he might have been innocent, so I don't want to, who knows, right? But I think what happens is, like you guys said, these things start with good ideas because obviously a lot of people are sick with what's going on in the world, right? And they want something better. And so they go along. And then just like you said, with the narcissistic behavior, Sharon, you said you could parallel that one-on-one relationship that people can break down with like a narcissist and everyone talks about that. But you can parallel that with a group of people, like I was saying, a collective consciousness, right? Like its own little culture. And that's, I guess, when it becomes a cult. And if you think about the scientific, whatever that means, usage of the word culture, a culture is also something that you can let something grow. It's like an environment for
breeding grounds.
Yeah, breeding ground, right? To grow and to see what happens in like a empty kind of space. I guess that's the wrong way to something I'm losing it here. Something that
we get it
from the regular. Yeah, you get it. So I think that's important to say that too, because a lot of people want to point fingers and blame people and get really upset and throw hate at people who might be who they think is a cult leader. But at the end of the day, you got to take a look in the mirror and say, are you really a victim? Like, did anybody come to your house and throw you in a van? You know what I mean? Like, I would say just look at it as you had a fun ride. You learned something in life, you know? So, all. Because again, if you just point fingers, it's back to that victim stuff and we just fall back down, right?
Yeah. And one more point. Sorry to keep it.
Oh, this is great. Sorry.
But sorry, I was just going to say, like you were saying at the beginning, sometimes these things happen kind of spontaneously. Like they weren't necessarily planned by the cult leader, the alleged cult leader, right? It's an opportunistic person that is like, oh, I'm getting this. Oh, I'm getting this. Oh, let's just keep rolling with it. How much more can I get? And I mean, I can speak from experience from being in a cult when I was, you know, growing up, the cult church that I went to. And once I like read up, you know, this was only a few years ago, was it 1920? Like four or five years ago that I finally came to the realization that this was the cult that I grew up in. And, the guy, I was looking at some articles and some stuff talking about the guy, and it was like, he was very opportunistic. Like if somebody said something and he had done something and it kind of like went together, he would make up a story that would bring those two things together and then like make himself a thing about it. Like, oh, I was lifted up into the clouds and I was the angel messenger, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it's opportunism involved.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Really quick, the last thing I wanted to say too is, I know I'm terrible, but, you know, because I think people that might watch, it's possible that people might watch this, this happens a lot, for the first time or whatever. And, you know, we're not judging people. Like, we all have our issues that we're working on and stuff. What we're doing is, though, we've learned some things and they're like making a lot of sense to us. So we're just sharing it. But the way we look at other people or people who might be caught up in stuff like this, it's like they're just another person with their own cross to bear. You know, like, we all have our crosses to bear. We're just putting this out there in the hopes that somebody who resonates with it is like, oh yeah, this makes sense. You know, this is what I went through or whatever. I had a relationship like this, and feel free, please, to comment below and share your experiences with us and let us know, how this resonates with you. But yeah,
without further ado.
Absolutely.
But wait, one more. I'm just kidding.
So just to touch on that last thing that Sharon said about, opportunists basically starting cults. Yeah, there's 100% that aspect of it. But then on the flip side, the cult members as well, there is a reason why those opportunities are there in the first place. Mm, and that's what I really want to focus on today. Not just on an individual level, but then on a societal level as well. So I guess to start on the individual level, healthy, healed people don't join cults. We'll just start off with that, right? Cults prey on or take advantage of very damaged people. And I know that we have all, I'm sure, had our own encounters with cults on one level or another, but it's very apparent, and it's not so much apparent at the foundation of what will eventually become the cult, because as we said, it doesn't always start that way. Cults tend to, as what Sharon said, start with the idea of the counterculture of creating something beautiful. And then they devolve into just absolute madness, with like legitimate sycophants and gaslighting and narcissistic abuse and, you know, raking people financially and empty promises of a made up hierarchy within the cult and made up titles within the cult and responsibilities that you'll be given, or maybe, you know, when cults happen in real life, there's often like a compound or an area where the cult will be centered. And, you know, if you're a good enough boy, then you can live there. You can be offered keys, you know, to live on the land. And it's all feeding into this. I think it's all feeding into something much deeper. On the surface, it seems like the person's just taking advantage of people for their money. And it's like, yeah, you 100%, you know, these cults are, they wouldn't function if there was not a monetary element to it, because who in their right mind is going to invest that much of their time every day to operating something like this as a cult leader if they're not being compensated very heavily for it, right? You wouldn't be able to. You need to go to work. You need to make an income. But on a much deeper level, and this is where I don't think that most cult leaders even have an understanding of this. This is where we go into like that spiritual, unseen, unknown realm, I think, where things just kind of play out and we don't even know that they're happening. But these people are preying on the inner child of each individual cult member who's following the leader. So to dive into that, what would prime somebody to be able to be taken advantage of so easily, like cult members are. And I, as I always say, everything goes back to childhood trauma, unresolved childhood trauma, I should say. So there are very deep wounds that a lot of people carry around, specifically with their parents or guardians or whoever raised them, right? And a lot of those could be like abandonment wounds or lack of self-esteem or just a wound of not being loved enough or not being taught enough about life, not having those emotional needs met when you were a child. And when you become an adult, there's this weird thing happens where people know that there's something wrong about them, like off about them, something damaged, but they don't want to show it to the world, right? Because then that would give the perception that they're weak, and nobody wants to feel weak. So most people just hide this within themselves, and then they seek external solutions to internal problems. And one of those is finding yourself a proper cult with a cult leader, somebody who is very charismatic and who is very proud of himself or herself, and somebody who seems to have answers, right? So we seek that external source of healing when it's impossible. Like, you'll never get that from somebody else, but that's what these people are seeking when they get involved in a cult. And again, I really want to differentiate between people who might be around during the communal starting foundational part of what will eventually become a cult. Those are not the people that I'm talking about. Those people might just really want a group of people to hang out with or talk with who are like-minded and share some of the same, you know, morals or some of the same interests. And, but like when a cult really takes that nosedive down into like just being just degradation, right? Like pure toxic evil. And it's like anybody could look at it and say, this is disgusting. This is abhorrent behavior. And there are people still clinging on and doubling down and tripling down and becoming more vile. And, you know, there's more sycophant behavior. Those are the people that I'm talking about that have these deep wounds that are seeking somebody else to heal their problems for them because they don't even want to admit that they have the problem. There's very weird psychology behind it. So I'll stop there because I don't want to do like a 30-minute run and let you guys weigh in.
Yeah, thank you very much for oversharing. No, I totally agree with what you're saying because, you know, if somebody was associated with one of these groups, they might take it personally and say, you know, are you talking, what are you saying? I have all these, but I think like what you said with the way it starts out and just the community aspect of certain things are really good, especially when things out in the mainstream culture are going totally bananas. And you're one of the only ones who sees it around you. So you're like, what the F, man, what is going on? You know, like what happened in 2020 through now, you know, there's just been insanity, especially if you watch the news still, or if you're even adjacent to the news. I mean, the only way I'm adjacent is through memes, but if you even took a little bit of this seriously, you would be just so stressed out and looking for people who agreed with you. So I, you know, that's what happened.
Throw in real quick. That's what I was going to say about the societal cause of why cults are able to happen is literally what you just said. So Sharon said they're opportunists on one end, right? The cult leader or like the top brass who's working behind the scenes to make sure that the cult is able to happen, right? Those are opportunists taking advantage of these people. These people are triggered. And like that's, I know that word has like a bad rap, especially since like, you know, the mid
trigger warning
2010s, like everyone was talking about being triggered. But it's a legitimate thing. So when the world goes crazy, periodically, because it does. It wasn't just, you know, the sniffles 3 years ago. It's a periodic like unleashing of just chaos in the world. It feels like every few years there's something that happens that really does legitimately trigger people to feel unsettled, unsafe, even as adults, because it's not triggering something here and now, it's triggering something that could even be forgotten, like buried in your subconscious from 30, 40, 50 years ago. Something happened where circumstances were kind of the same as a child, and it doesn't even have to be the same variables, right? So during the last 3 years, we had a set of guidelines that we were supposed to be able, or that we were supposed to follow, even though they were absolutely insane and made no sense, right? So a lot of people, this is like a, it's not a rare phenomenon, but it, given the last 3 years of chaos, it makes sense why so many online cults have started in the last 3 years, because a lot of people were triggered into feeling deep childhood wounds via the events since 2020. Now, those childhood wounds are not necessarily related to medical issues. And that's what people need to understand about childhood trauma, is it, I'm not saying that when somebody was a child, they had to put on a diaper on their face or something. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that authoritarian push for you to not only accept, but be glad that you're able to follow behaviors that are insane and make no sense, could be triggering something from your childhood. How many of us as very small children were given rules by parents that made no sense, right? Maybe you have a narcissistic parent and they're just telling you to do something just to be in control. A lot of people grew up in homes where control was a basis for a relationship rather than love. So when you grow into adulthood and you have that same thing happening, it could be very triggering. You have a government who's telling you, we're doing this because we want to keep you safe and we love you. But your radar is going off and going, no, you're batshit crazy. This is insane. This doesn't make any sense. This is just pure authoritarian, tyrannical control that's happening right now. And then you go, wait, this feels familiar. You know, like I something registers inside of you. And then you go, I was terrified when I was a child because I had nowhere to go. These were the top authority figures. My parents were the top authority figures, and they're telling me that I have to do X, Y, and Z. And the same thing is happening now, right? Like, who are you going to run to as a child if your parents are traumatizing you? You have nobody to run to. They're the top. Who are you going to run to as an adult when your very own government is doing the same exact thing to you? Where do you run to? It's the same exact thing that's happening, just different variables, different circumstances, 20, 30, 40 years later. So that triggering that happened over the last 3 years, I think really birthed a lot of these online cults, because people were very terrified of what they were seeing around them, even if they didn't know why. You may mean, look at the reaction that people had. They were terrified, right? This didn't happen with bird flu, with swine flu, with any of the other ones that they tried to do. And what was the only difference? They implemented a lot of things with this one that they did not in the other ones. And I think that really struck a chord with people on a subconscious level. And then in come the opportunists, you know, the narcissistic opportunists who might not even understand why they're doing something. But when you are a sociopath like that, a narcissist like that, a psychopath like that, you observe human behavior and you learn patterns of how people react to things. So I'm not saying that these cult leaders have like a deep understanding of psychology or anything, but they understand people's behavior and how they will react. And that's why they're so, so good at what they do.
Absolutely.
I think they could even do it unconsciously in without even realize what they're doing. Some people, and when we say things like narcissist and psychopath and all that, people that just display this behavior, they don't even have to be like a diagnosed narcissist or a narcissist or whatever, but somebody just exhibits this behavior, it's going to fall into that pattern. I think what happens is we don't realize as men and women, we have patterns of behavior that we can get stuck in. And the larger our reach and the larger, more people in our circle, they're also going to be affected by us if we're like the top one at that. So these things will, I think, just manifest organically. You know, it's really, really crazy. So again, because I think a lot of people throw around terms like narcissist that can trigger people, right? Because they're like, oh, well, that doesn't mean this and that and all that. But like I said, it's just, we're just talking about behavior, right? At the end of the day, we're not really, it's not as important the label, I guess.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a correlation between clinical narcissists and sociopaths and psychopaths and cult leaders. But yeah, I mean, you see a lot of that behavior exhibited within cult members because they're trying to emulate this person. And again, that's the childhood parent relationship. You try to emulate your parents, mm-hmm. right? The oh, same thing is happening because children were hurt by their parents, and now they're looking for a new external authority figure. They're prescribing parenthood onto the cult leader. Be my daddy, be my mommy, heal those wounds that my real mommy and daddy gave me. The cult leader, it's sad. It's sad. I'm not mocking people at all. It's very sad. Because they're hurting so bad inside, but they will not admit it even to themselves. But from an outside perspective, you're letting another man or another woman make decisions about your personal life, about your marriage, about how you raise your children, about your religion, about your finances, whatever it may be. This person doesn't even know your name. This person does not even know your name, but you are giving them parental status in your heart because you need a wound healed so bad. It's very sad. Yeah.
And I just thought of something funny too, interesting. But there are people who will give that kind of the attention that a like you were saying, that this is my daddy figure, I need this to be healed, and I'm in the cult. But then I've seen also behavior of like, I'm so obsessed with this that I have to like, quote, hate watch, or I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. So even that still continues to give that narcissist cult leader attention. It's like it's not going to end. It's not going to help necessarily. Maybe it might serve to like wake other people up, but mostly I think if it's done in such hate, with such hatred, it's not helpful.
Yeah, 100%. And I would say that I would argue that it's the same wound.
Yep,
it's just manifesting in a different way.
Yep.
You know, there's 100%. There's cults where people watch because they're obsessed, and then they hate watch. But at the end of the day, it's like both parties are spending the same amount of time watching or listening
mm-hmm.
to the same cult leader. They're engaging in the same amount of discussion, the same amount of mental energy is going to thinking about this person. Yeah, it's weird. And I think it's the same thing. It's like that could just be a manifestation of somebody's buried trauma towards their own mother or father for hurting them, and now they have a way to, you know, ascribe parental status to somebody else and then get that anger and that venom out onto this person. Mm-hmm. But it's obviously not going to work. They're not your parent. You know, but people try weird things.
And it's not helpful in the end. I can see how it can be helpful in the beginning to vent with people that maybe are close to you and get a support group and have people to talk to and heal. And eventually that it becomes a non-issue. You don't really talk about it anymore, or even if you do, you laugh about it. It doesn't hurt like it did when you first left and realized what a mess you were in.
Yeah. And when it doesn't hurt anymore is when you know that you've begun to heal.
Yes.
I won't make any claims for anybody and say, like, you know, you're healed now, but yeah, at least the healing has begun, because when you think about it, or if you hear somebody say something, and this is just across the board, this isn't just pertaining to cults, just in general, like when you can think about something or hear somebody talk about something and not have that emotional trigger reaction, you know, you can think about it just objectively and just laugh about it and see all the beauty in it, even though it is chaotic and disgusting at times. That's when healing is beginning to happen.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because I feel like if not, then you just took this person who you had on a pedestal and now you just put them in the pit, right? And now they're the cause of all your problems instead of the solution to all your problems. It's just like inverted, right? And that's
why, and it's so honestly, it's like what a lot of kids do to their own parents if they grow up in dysfunctional, abusive homes, right? One day they want, you know, they want daddy to love them, and they love daddy so much because he did this for them. And then the next day, maybe daddy has a temper tantrum and now we hate daddy. He was so mean today. It's just the same thing, you know,
flipping. Now I'm going to go be a stripper because my dad, right? It's like,
yeah. Into. Yep. So, the foundation of what I wanted to talk about, and we can branch off and go any which way, is that childhood trauma primes people to join cults, because there are unhealed, very deep, very traumatic wounds from childhood that a lot of people don't even know that they have. And I think until you really address those, or even admit that you have them, right? Like, you don't have to completely heal something before you can move on from a toxic relationship or a toxic situation. But you have to, I would say, at least address that you have something going on. Acknowledge.
It's the first step. Acknowledging it.
And I've found that, you know, just reverting back and just allowing that. I really don't like this term when I say inner child. You know, people say inner child, because I feel like it's almost there's like an element of detachment to it, where it's almost like you're talking about something or somebody else. Like, it's not you, it's my inner child. Like, no, it's just who you are. It's who you were when you were a child. You're still that person. We've talked about this. You're still that person. You just now have this duffel bag full of coping mechanisms and defense mechanisms. But once you stop giving so much energy and attention to keeping all of those defenses at the ready, which I think is funny because you pulled that 10 of wands and it talked about juggling all these different things. That's a perfect analogy for what people do in their own lives to stop being hurt more, right? They have all these defense mechanisms, but once you just let those go and just let yourself be who you really are, then you can look at these online cults, if you're part of one, and just be like, this is not anything that I would have been involved in when I was, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. Why am I part of it now? I would never subject my own child to this filth. So why am I subjecting myself to it now? You really need to remember who you are and allow yourself to partake in those things. I mean, a lot of these cults, it's like, and this is like not a new phenomenon either. This goes way back, you know, like you can talk to people who were in cults 40, 50 years ago, and they say the same thing. It's like these cult leaders literally try to get you to stop engaging with the outside world in any way. They paint this picture of everything is evil. You should be terrified. They're coming for you. It's only a matter of time. They're coming for you. They're going to take your organs. They're going to take your home. They're going to do all this stuff.
The end of the world is coming.
The end of the world is coming. First off, it doesn't make sense. I think it's silly. If the end of the world is coming, why are you starting a cult? Would you not, wouldn't you want to spend time with your family or go travel and see the world or help people get your karma up or something, you know? It's like the global warming people who are like, 2012, everything's going to end. You know, the oceans are going to rise 1,000 feet, but then they're buying beachfront property. It's the same exact thing. They're creating this false image of the world, which works. That's a sad thing, is it works because they're not creating it for, and again, I don't think that this is on purpose. I think this is very, very subconscious, like on a spiritual level. They're not creating this image for men and women, for strong men and women. They're creating this fear for that inner child. They're scaring the inner child in the same way that a lot of parents scare children. Right. And this is why I think parenting needs to be a very conscious thing. And it's not, you know, a lot of people are damaged because the parent is overwhelmed and they're stressed out and they yell something at their kid. You don't realize that when you're parenting, you're teaching 100% of the time. You don't have to sit a kid down with a pen and paper and say, now it's time to do your ABCs. Every reaction, every word, everything that they take in, they're learning. So if you yell at your kid and say, don't you run out in that parking lot, there's cars out there, one of them will hit you and kill you, you have just instilled fear in your child of something that doesn't need to be scary, right? You could much more calmly explain to them why you don't run out into a parking lot. But most parents don't do that. And the same thing is happening with the cult leaders. I think they're saying, you know, oh, if you go out and you put a mask on, you know, have fun in your FEMA camp. That's not the reality of the situation. It's not the reality of the situation whatsoever. But they're painting this terrible world so that people don't even engage in it. And lo and behold, somebody has an answer. Somebody has a plan. Somebody's going to have some property. They'll definitely let you in when the whole world comes crashing down. You're definitely going to be let in there. They don't know your name. They don't know what you look like. They don't know who your family is. They don't know if you're a good person or not, but they're definitely going to let you in because they told you that they would. It's opportunism based on trauma. And that's why I think that cults are one of the most disgusting things. anything that plays on trauma and takes advantage of hurt people is very disgusting to me. People that play on fear and trauma and pain and stuff instead of trying to help people it's abhorrent behavior to me.
Indeed.
Yeah, and you see that with a lot of these different channels that are out there with the fear. They just play on the fear. And even if they think they're not playing on the fear, they're playing on the fear.
Yeah, or if they claim that they're not, but they really are. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of victim-y. I notice a lot of victim-y. I can see the victimhood in a mile away these days when people say anything anymore. I'm just like, sounds very victim-y.
Yep.
So you're telling me you're a victim.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the other thing, though, I want to say really quickly. It's also hard when, you know, for me anyway, when I get in this position, because now I automatically start to judge everybody who I'm seeing is acting like a victim. And now that's something I have to work on. So see, everybody, you know, we're not claiming to be perfect over here. We all have our stuff that we work on. We just worked through stuff and we thought we'd share some ideas, right? Like, but yeah, I think that's the funny thing about the spiritual
journey,
yeah, is that that's part of it. You learn these truths, right? And then you're like, oh yeah, now I'm better than everyone else. So it's like your consciousness goes up and then it goes back down, then you're like, oh shit, and then it goes back up and then it goes back down, you know. I guess it's
spiritual ego.
Yeah, spiritual ego comes in. Yeah, that's why I'm wearing the hat today, because I just want everyone to know what a silly wizard I am.
Yes, Randolph the Gray,
that's right.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's crazy. Whole thing is crazy. I think it all is just childhood trauma, as always. And that's It's a sad thing to me is that I'm not going to say that it's easy to heal from these deep wounds, but the steps that are necessary for one to take to even begin the healing are so much easier than people really think. And yeah, as we talked about a couple minutes ago, the first one is just acknowledging, right? You wake up every day, you have this gnawing, kind of nagging, just sadness inside of you, or pain, you know, something you can't explain. You just need to acknowledge that straight out of the gate. Acknowledge that you're not feeling like you want to, or like you remember feeling. You know, that's one of the things that has helped me most in life is comparing how I feel at any given point to how I feel, like how I remember feeling when I was a child, and just being like, well, I'm not there today, so obviously I need to adjust something, because that's fully attainable at all points during life. It's not like you can only be that happy when you're a child. Yes, things were not as stressful in ways, but then they were more stressful in other ways. You know, like, you didn't have money, but you also couldn't really communicate with people. You couldn't make rational decisions because your brain wasn't even developed yet. Like, you had a whole different set of circumstances as a child, but you still were capable of joy for the most, like, the smallest things would bring you so much joy. So I like to compare how I'm feeling or my reactions to things with how I remember my childhood. That's a good place to start, I would say. Anyways, healing is to think about your childhood a lot. Like, really think about it. And then from there, like, do things that you enjoyed doing from your childhood without the fear of societal or cult judgment. Just do them. You know, like, if you enjoy reading, then read. If you enjoy playing video games, play video games. I don't demonize things like that, which is something that you'll find in cults all the time, right? Oh, you play a video game, you're worthless, you're whatever, expletive, derogatory, name calling, gaslighting, narcissistic, abuse intended, name. Like, no. If you like playing video games, play video games. Maybe somebody played video games with their parent when they were young, and then they lost their parent, and then playing a video game kind of lets them, you know, nostalgically remember those times with their parent. Like, how's that a bad thing? It's just,
yeah.
Read books. If you enjoy movies, enjoy movies. There's nothing wrong with movies. There's nothing wrong with books. There's nothing wrong with video games. For every argument that these cult leaders have against something, there are a million arguments for something. Like, if you play video games, you know, the best surgeons in the world were either video game players when they were children or are still active video game players. Their hand-eye coordination dexterity, is, yeah, the dexterity, like, it is unparalleled. So you can talk shit about video game players until you need a heart transplant, and then you're going to want somebody who plays video games and they're doing it. You can talk shit about people that watch movies until you want movie recommendations. And then, you know, it's just never ending. It's like, just stop listening to these people and just be who you are. This life was given to you to experience, not to just funnel away all of your money and your time and your energy to somebody else who doesn't care about you. Like, find out who you are.
Yeah. The cult I grew up in was, there were just even more basic things, just very simple, basic things that I couldn't do as a little girl. If I wanted to go play sports in like grade school, I really couldn't, because I wasn't allowed to wear pants or shorts. I had to wear a skirt or a dress that covered my knees or below. And so I looked like a little prairie girl, Little House on the Prairie. And just a lot of other restrictions. My hair could never be cut, so it was very long. So it, for me, like it would get in my way. And over time, I felt like I was getting headaches too. And I felt like it was because of that. You know, just simple things that, that as a kid growing up, I didn't think it made any sense that I couldn't wear pants. It was so simple, you know, that I couldn't cut my hair. That it was just a really simple thing. Why couldn't I be able to cut my hair and be comfortable? You know, it took me a long time. And sometimes I still struggle with the hair thing, like, because I prefer having shorter hair. And like my, the haircut that I really liked the most for myself was a short bob, like even shorter than it is now. And, but I struggle mentally with that because that was prohibited. And we're talking, how many freaking years ago was that, you know? And it's still for me, like a thing that I'm like, but you know, I should look like more girly with longer hair and, you know, nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with the girls that have long hair. I see girls with long hair all the time. I used to have really long hair too. And I thought when it was like probably around the length of my, you know, mid to low back, you know, it was nice hair. I had great hair, but, and I see other people and I'm like, oh, they have beautiful, gorgeous hair. But I just, for some reason, still have this thing and I just don't allow myself to let it grow out. I just, because in my mind, even as a kid, I always imagined myself with short hair. Like for me, that's what's comfortable. That's what works for me. And, kind of same thing with the dresses and the skirts. Like I don't hardly ever wear dresses or skirts. I mostly wear jeans or shorts because that's what I always thought was comfortable. So it's just, I mean, cults can do like so much damage to just your mind and how you see something. Like they'll turn something into like an atrocious sin, which is just very simple and basic. You know, like earrings too. Like I didn't pierce my ears until I was, it was probably years ago, 10 years ago, maybe. And that, you know, cause I wasn't allowed to do that. Just weird. So like when you're in it and you question things and you're like, this is weird. Why is this not allowed? I mean, use your logic too. That's okay. And think about it. Like, is it a bad thing? What's going to happen if you do? Are you going to be struck by lightning?
Yeah. And also understand that 100% of the time when a cult leader is telling you to not do something, they are doing it. It's every single time, right? You'll have cult leaders who say you can't drink alcohol, but quietly behind the scenes, they're still alcoholics. Or, mm-hmm. You can't take a Tylenol if you have a headache or whatever, right? I don't personally take any pharmaceutical medication, but I don't bash people who need it.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother talk in itself, right? I'm not going to judge people for where they are on their health journey or whatever. But if somebody has children and they're working full time and they have a splitting headache and they need to take an aspirin or a Tylenol or something, you know, you have a cult leader in your ear telling you not to do that while they're like snorting gas station caffeine pills and Adderall. And it's like, why are you taking this person's advice? You know, people will, you just talked about, you know, your hair and stuff. There are cult leaders who talk about how you can groom your own body, like body hair, you know, like the depth of the insanity of cults is
absolutely
is insane, but you have to understand that these people are doing it. And that's one of the weirdest things about cults is one day something will be unacceptable, untolerated. If you even speak on it, you're banned from the cult. We'll never say your name again. But then 2 days later, the cult leader can decide that it's okay. And then everybody's just, oh yeah, it's always been okay. This is fantastic. This is great. This is the best thing ever. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, do you ever just stop and just want to go do your own thing for a day and not have to worry about that? That is a lot of stress.
Yeah.
That's a lot of stress to constantly have to keep up on what is okay or not okay within your cult. Like, what happens if you go take a vacation for 2 weeks and you come back? I mean, God,
things are upside down.
Yeah. You'd have to reassimilate. That process would be insane. It's just, just be who you are.
Yeah. In the cult I grew up in, it's bizarre because it's still going, even though the cult leader is dead.
Whoa.
I mean, because some of them believe that he's going to rise again, like Jesus.
Sure.
For real. And like, there's also this, like you were talking about, like it could change from day to day of what they're going to say. Well, this particular one would change based on his location. So if like he was preaching in one town, well, then he would go to another town, and whatever church that was, he would talk about whatever was amenable to them. So like if Christmas was okay or whatever, he would work that angle. So there's a lot of different churches around the world who have so many different, like, so many differing views on just, could it be one thing? Like there were churches that were like, oh, Christmas is okay. Christmas is fine. It's great. You know, whatever, you can have a tree, you can do all of that kind of shit. And then others were like, God forbid you even like celebrate it at all. You know, it varies. And it's just bizarre because the cult leader will, again, opportunist, whatever that particular audience was okay with, they would, you know, go with that. And that's how they would maneuver.
Yeah, totally. It's just the hypocrisy and the double standards are, they're so comically apparent. But when you have those cult goggles on, it's like all logic goes out the window. You know, it's very sad. It's like, you'll see cult leaders just, I mean, do anything and everything. At this point, they have an opinion on everything.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I go, like, that would be exhausting in itself.
Absolutely.
You know, like, I don't want to be involved in anything like that.
Right. Well, so we've talked about this before, but some people, again, it's probably a trauma from childhood, but they need someone to tell them what's okay and what's not okay.
Yeah.
Right. And so, because they need that parent figure. And so they'll be like, well, the church, you know, they've been around for X, Y, Z, and they know, and the lead, you know, the church leaders and the priests and the XYZs, bishops and all, they know. And it's like, those things were made up. Like, those were just rules that they made up for people. Like, you're going to listen to that? No offense.
Yeah. None of that is in the Bible. Like, you can pick up a Bible and read it. A lot of these things are given to you by men.
Mm-hmm.
And men 1,000 years ago, when times were way different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's very strange. Like, the, you know, you can't drink alcohol, but you're still a drunk. You can't watch movies because movies are satanic, right? You can't watch movies or TV, but also, do you have any good movies or TV recommendations?
Yeah, exactly.
And people, I just think about how many people like sold all of the TVs in their home who enjoyed watching movies or TV prior, and then find out that their cult leader is actively watching TV. And it's just like, at what point do you just stop and go, what?
Yeah, only the cult leader's
allowed to. Only they're allowed to. Yeah.
So they can tell you what it says.
Yeah. I've heard of cults where people like degrade the idea of dinosaurs and say that you're a terrible parent if you allow your children to have a book with dinosaurs in it because it's part of a secret agenda, and but then are completely fine with their children enjoying dragons.
Yeah, it's like other things like fairies and those are okay, but God forbid dinosaurs and dragons.
You can't have dinosaurs, but you can for sure have dragons and any other made up mythological creature. But who knows? Maybe next week you can
fairies
have
and
dinosaurs.
Mermaids.
You never know. It's true. Also silly, and it's like when you look at it from the outside and you look at these people who genuinely believe that they are part of something, and you're like, you're part of wasting your life and making somebody else rich. That's what you're part of. You know, that's a sad truth of it. Whatever these cults start out as, it's never what they end as. Like, every single intentional community has failed. Every single intentional community has failed in the long run. Some of them go much longer than others. And that could simply be based on the variables, maybe the outside societal issue that made that cult possible lasts longer during that time than a different time, but they all fail. And you can have these beautiful relationships with people on a smaller scale too. You know, like that's one thing that I've really been focusing on recently, is like remembering that you can talk to your neighbors. You know, you can talk to people when you go through a grocery store checkout line. You don't have to find people who
agree with everything
you agree with. Yeah, every single opinion in order to speak to somebody. Just talk to the person in the grocery checkout line. Like, that person's been standing there for 6 hours.
That's what Jesus would have done.
Yeah, they'd probably love to have a, you know, 2-minute conversation about the weather. They don't give a shit. People just want human connection again. And like, what more detached of a life is there than never speaking to anybody in person and only speaking to people online who somebody else said that you could speak to, but maybe not today because that person's showing behavior that I don't like. But then the next day you can talk to that person. It's like, come on, people, you're not 3 years old. You're grown ass men and women. Make your own decisions. Talk to who you want to talk to. Don't let somebody rule your life like that. And in doing so, you will begin to heal that trauma inside of you. All of those wounds that led you down that path to eventually get into the cult will begin to heal, and then you can get out. And I'm like, this is the weird part. Like, I'm so deep and like meta about this stuff that I'm not even mad at the cult. I'm not mad at the idea of the cult, because the cult allows a lot of people to heal.
Absolutely.
A lot of people don't know that they have issues until they get into the cult, and then they're given that perspective, and then they go, holy shit, this is everything that I always thought that I wanted, was this intentional community of like-minded individuals. And now that I'm in it, I'm repulsed by it. And this is not who I am.
Absolutely. It's huge.
Yeah. Any other echo chamber, sorry there, Sharon, that there's really no growth, right? And like you were saying, it becomes, after a while, you have this fear that you're going to do something that's wrong and you're going to be ostracized. And if people were really there for you, then they would be there for you, unless you were like, you know, committing crimes or something, or doing something really abhorrent. But if you were just having a drink or watching a movie or whatever it is, something, or if you cut your hair or whatever, and people are going to like shun you and freak out, that's a whole new level.
And that's why people oftentimes stay in cults, is because they don't want to, maybe they were abandoned by their father or their mother in childhood, and now they've gotten themselves in so deep and they don't even understand that they've created this weird parental child relationship with this random person online. they don't want to feel that pain again of feeling like they've been abandoned again by somebody that they put up on a pedestal. And it's like, there's nothing else that you could possibly do at that point. Like, you really do just have to go, that was silly of me to do, and then chop that pedestal down and run. There's no other outcome. There's no other way to make that situation work. You just have to admit what you did. And ironically, admitting what you did will help you heal, and then it won't hurt to run from that abusive, toxic person. It all goes back to healing, like healing trauma, admitting that you were hurt. There's nothing wrong with being hurt. Life is pain. Life is always pain. Like, you're constantly going to get hurt. If it's not, you know, somebody in your life, it could be the fucking weather. You know, you could get struck by lightning. That hurts. You could get attacked by an animal. That hurts. You could slip and fall down the side of a mountain. That hurts. Like, there is pain everywhere in this life. But I think what makes us human is admitting that pain and then working together to not let it allow us to become, you know, so jaded in life, so apathetic towards people.
Yeah, I, like you were just talking about pain and being hurt. And I was just thinking, I'll just speak out loud what I was coming to my mind. Is that people are afraid to show weakness, right? So that's why they're afraid to say that they were hurt or they're in pain or they fell, you know, quote. But the narcissist or the, you know, narcissist cult leader is, you know, to show weakness and pain like that is to be vulnerable, is to be, quote, human, and they have set themselves up as godlike. So they're very unlikely to show that humanity, that weakness, that vulnerability. So you won't see that from them. It has to come from you to acknowledge that you were hurt, that you're in pain, that you're vulnerable, you know? And yeah. Speaking of like vulnerability, it's especially difficult sometimes in cults for women, because the men seem to take very strong views, especially from the cult leader, because mostly it's men. And the men in these cults, the cult leaders, you know, will tell men how to treat their wives. They'll tell them how to be in bed and, you know, all these things that they have no business telling other men what to do.
Yeah.
Because each relationship is different. Each marriage is different. You know, they have no business telling you what to do. And yet they're telling people all these things. And these women become, they end up in abusive situations, and it's very much a wake up call. You know, I read about it for the cult that I grew up in. I mean, so I can imagine it's just like this for every cult, you know, women being treated atrociously. I was so angry. I was so upset. And I was just upset at the situation, right? How could that happen? But you know, it also made me upset with the cult and the cult leader, so much so that was my moment of like, wake up, like that is a cult. And, you know, that served its purpose. But I was just trying to bring up the point that women suffer a lot in some of these cults because they're, you know, they are more vulnerable in many ways when, you know, a man tries to control them.
Yeah. And that also is childhood trauma. I mean, everything is childhood trauma, and it's nothing new here to any of us, but it's like that cliche saying of daddy issues, right? Like that's it. It's thrown around, and I think it's people try to minimize the severity of it, but it's very true. Like, you know, little girls into young women should have a strong, moral, loving father in their life. And when they don't, then they again seek it externally. This is the recurring theme, is seeking something externally that you did not have in your childhood. So then they go, this cult member, maybe I'll get involved with this cult because this guy who I like is into it and I want to make him happy. And it's almost, you know, the same thing with the cult members who join because they need that parental relationship again with the cult leader. It's almost like people are trying to recreate their childhoods in adulthood, but in a safer way with people that they have chosen. You know, like none of us get the opportunity to choose the families that we're born into or the parents that we have. We're just given what we're given, and those circumstances that we grow up within, we don't really have a lot of control over. So then I think that that's really one of the driving things that makes cults possible, is people then grow up and they get money and they get a home. Then maybe they get a wife, they get kids or whatever. And they go, okay, now that everything else in my life is settled and I feel some level of comfort financially or whatever, maybe I can go back and try to heal those wounds now subconsciously. I'm not saying that anybody does this from a place of like conscious thought or decision, but they go, maybe I can kind of try to recreate my family now, but I will choose a daddy who believes in everything that I believe in. Right. And then, it's not going to work. I mean, I understand the mechanism behind it, because it's like, maybe I can try to feel love from a father figure who I agree with and agrees with me on everything and tells me that I'm a good boy every day because I did X, Y, and Z, or I gave him a certain amount of money. But it's like, that is not, that's not, that's literally just going to make that wound worse that you have with your own parents. Like, you have to address the actual problem. None of what you're doing is actually going to heal the wound. You know, being involved in a cult could be a catalyst for sparking that understanding that you need to address those things, but I'm definitely not telling anybody to run out and try to find a cult to heal their childhood trauma, because there are much easier paths to doing that.
Yeah, 100%. I'm glad you said that, because it's something I wanted to bring up, is another mode of healing. And it really just has to do with being in contact with the present moment. You know, as cheesy, as cliche as that sounds, just like you said with the daddy issues thing, right? It gets thrown around in a different way though, the present moment, but it really is, there really is a lot there. Or in my journey, I found that there's a lot there, because in the present moment, like right now, for example, or when we end this recording, I could be here and I could have anxiety and fear about things that I have to do and about the future. But in the moment, I'll just be here. You know, there's nothing attacking me now. And it's something that I learned and helped me a lot. It was one of the guided meditations that I was doing when I was getting into meditation. And the guy was saying, he's like, you know, is there anything attacking you right now? You know, well, think about how safe you are. Think about the locks on your door. And they were a little new agey, so they weren't saying, like, think about your safe in the back that might contain firearms, allegedly. You know, but it's just thinking about all the...
Think about how you can protect yourself.
Yeah, think about how you are protected, right? And, you know, even society. And he was saying, like, the laws and how people normally are, and it really isn't as dangerous as you think. And just this whole exercise that you go through, and you ponder that in the present moment. And it really helped me a lot, because I did have all this fear of the future. I was worried about things that were going to happen, you know, just anxiety. And then after I listened to that meditation a few times, it really started to stick with me. And I'm like, yeah, what the hell am I? Like, everything right now in the perfect moment is all right. Now, I'm not saying you just don't make any plans for the future, or, you know, you don't, like, you're only like living in the present moment. That might not be for everybody, right? Maybe if you're like a comedic performer or whatever, you could just do whatever you want, or a rock star. But yeah, you have to make plans and look ahead to the future and stuff, but it doesn't mean you have to get lost there, right? Same thing with the past. You don't have to get lost in the things that you've done and the things that have happened to you. I say you could just, the best use of the past really is to just learn and use it as an example moving forward. And the future, the best use for that is to just make a good plan, but be open, right? Be open to whatever happens. It's just like we've been talking about in our Tao series on the Oversharing Show podcast. We're doing a whole series on the Tao Te Ching. Check it out. We even have its own playlists on YouTube. But they talk about this balance. And it really, I'm beginning to learn that the Tao is really all just about balance. You know, there's people that are quote unquote like Taoist monks, and they could still go out and drink and do all these things and have a good time. But it's more about balance, right? It's like, are you always going out and having a drink every night? Or is it like a once in a while thing to let out some steam or whatever? And even if you are always going out and having a drink, it's about where you are right now, right? And moving forward and what's going to actually fulfill you, because people think that all these things, and cults are the same way. They think they're going to be fulfilled. They have this hole inside them, something that's missing. They're always chasing it, right? And that's why people go after money, and they want to be rich. And they, and let me tell you, I know plenty of rich people, and they're no happier than me. You know, they actually like to hang out with me because sometimes I bring a lot of joy to their life because I'm funny or whatever, and I just have a good attitude. But no matter how much seeking in the external, it really comes down to just self-love and getting to know yourself and accepting who you are. All your, you know, your crazy cravings and all these terrible things that they are, you just have to start there where you are and accept it and love it. And then I feel like that's when true healing can actually occur. Because if not, it manifests in different ways. It's just like any of those funny cartoons or movies where they're like near a dam and it springs a leak, or like Austin Powers, right? So, and then he puts a little gum in one leak and then it pops out somewhere else. I feel like that's how it works with this stuff. When you try to push it down and repress it, it just comes out in other areas.
And also understanding too, that you are not your body. And a lot of the decisions that you make and a lot of the fears that you have are based on biochemical reactions within your body that are triggered from past traumas. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, I mean,
past traumas that are passed down in your family line.
Yeah.
People don't
like epigenetically. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like, if you're having a reaction to something or you have a fear of something, really sit there and think about it for a minute and just go like, am I actually like consciously scared of this thing, or is this a reaction that's taking place inside of me and my mind has now been hijacked by my body? Because that happens 90% of the time, right? So like, are you really scared that the world is falling apart, or that the world is going to end, or that they're going to set up FEMA camps and everything because you didn't want to put something over your mouth during flu season? Is that what you're really scared of? Or is something very deep being triggered inside of you, and now you're attributing your fear to this thing in society and then running to join a cult?
Yeah.
Thinking that you'll be saved. It's like, that's not how it works. You really have to, you know, one of the best things that I ever did after my like severe car accident is I got to a point where I was extremely anxious. Like I had crippling anxiety about everything. None of it made sense. It was all illogical. I was completely under the control of my dysregulated nervous system, right? I was riding that roller coaster every day. And I had to start doing exposure therapy. So like when you are terrified of something and it's illogical, it's irrational, it makes no sense, the only way to really get over it is to do it. You know,
expose,
like,
expose yourself to it.
Yeah. You got to retrain your brain, right? Mm-hmm. Because your brain now has this trigger of saying maybe every time I go to this place, you have to be nervous because something bad happened in this place. You have to go to that place repeatedly and retrain your brain and get rid of those triggers, because they're literal triggers in your brain. They're neural pathways that your brain creates. So when you go to that place again, you will have that reaction and your body will tell you to run. This happens in the animal kingdom all the time. This happens with every living thing, right? If a gazelle escapes a lion, the gazelle sits there and shakes for 10 or 15 minutes afterwards. And what they're doing is they're not only getting rid of the adrenaline in their body, they're literally burning it off through muscle contraction. But during that 15 minutes, they've done brain scans on animals and found that they're creating neural pathways in their brain at like 1,000 times faster than they usually do. So the animal is replaying everything that just happened during that chase with the predator, so that next time they get chased, if they run through that same exact place, they know, last time I almost tripped over this stick right here. So the brain creates a little memory inside the head, so that next time you're going to jump a little bit faster so you don't trip. The human brain does that as well. So you have to do exposure therapy and really, really, even if things are scary, you know, you still have to do them. I mean, I did it the other day. I have horrible balance issues. I have like inner ear issues. I have Meniere's disease. And then just with my back, and I have sciatica in my left leg. So my left leg is like half numb. So all of these things together, I have really bad balance issues. One of the things that really sets it off is when I ride in an elevator, because, and this is fairly common if you have balance issues, you can't see any movement taking place, but your body perceives that you're moving. Mm-hmm. And if you already have a compromised, is it vestibular system in your ear, then it can just set it off. And all of a sudden you feel like you're spinning and rocking on a boat. Mm. So for 10 years now, I don't take elevators. I just take stairs everywhere. And I always have told myself, well, it's good for you. It's better to take stairs, right? You're getting, if something's on the fifth floor, you just climbed 5 flights of stairs, right? That's a little tiny 2-minute workout during the day. You got a little bit of exercise. But I had an ENT appointment the other day and I took the elevator. I was by myself. It's like, I've had a legitimate fear of taking elevators because of what it does to me. I can't even hardly walk afterwards. But then I realized like that's a trigger, because it happened a long time ago. And I took an elevator the other day, got off, and I just walked to my appointment. I was pretty dizzy for about a minute afterwards, but it didn't kill me. Like, these are, you gotta really understand that a lot of the fears that you have about life are, they're not really who you are, and they can lead you to some very, that was such a long explanation, but they can lead you to some very, very dark life choices that you will regret later, like joining cults.
Yeah.
I feel like it all boils down to a fear of death too. When you boil all these fears down, yes. Really. And I think that's a good place to start too. Like, and the other thing I was going to say really before I get into that was going to be, sometimes what I would do when I talk to people that have fears or irrational fears, I'm like, well, think about what's the worst that's going to happen, right? Go down this road. That might not be a good example with the whole FEMA camp thing, but say it's just like a fear of public speaking or a fear of this, or like you getting on the elevator, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to pass out in the elevator, or you're going to fall over and somebody might laugh at you or whatever. Right. So I tell people that too. They have this anxiety and they're like, oh, I'm worried about this. And it's the same way that I got through it. It was the same thing with my anxiety. I'm like, well, what's the worst that's going to happen? And most times I boiled it down to, oh, I can die. Right. And that's when I think I made a lot of progress, was when I got over my fear of death. And again, I always say, it's not like I want to die or I'm like looking forward to it or anything. It's just that I am not really fearing it, because I feel like everything that ends has a new beginning. It feels like that's the way this whole realm works. So no matter what happens after I die or pass away, I think it's going to be not what we're taught. It's just going to be like a normal thing. And the best way I always describe it to people, it's like waking up from a dream, right? We're going to wake up and be like, oh, okay, all right, that's what it was all about. Or like when you're playing a video game and you die, you know, you're like, oh shit, now we got to do this over again or whatever it is. So yeah.
Yeah, totally. A lot of fears are irrational. That one in particular, that's one that I've pondered for like 20 years. It's like, why are, even me, dude, I'm scared of death 100% because I don't know what's on the other end. But then it's like, is it a fear of death or is it a fear of the unknown?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a fear of lack of control? Like, there's so many elements to that when you really dive into it. And then you apply those to cult members. And it's like, are they, is there a fear of lack of control with them? You know, like sometimes it's, yeah, it's weird, man. There's so many, sometimes you feel so out of control or unable to control your own life that, like Sharon said, you want to give somebody else that control over you. Don't do that. Don't do that. That's dangerous.
I mean, if you're going to do it, do it. But, you know, just know the consequences.
Yeah, I mean, you can. You definitely can. I would strongly advise you not do that because the only people that will ever consciously take that control are people who will hurt you and prey on
manipulate
you.
Manipulate you in a negative way.
Yeah, yeah. Extort you, whatever mm-hmm. it is. They'll use you. Like mm-hmm. people who are balanced and healed and compassionate and moral, you know, people who understand that you are also a human being, they don't want that control. Normal people exactly. don't want control over other people. Mm-hmm. Just normal people, one more time, normal people do not want control over other people. So if you ever find yourself in a situation, be it a online cult or a relationship or a friend group or whatever it may be, and they're trying to control you, that's a big red flag right there.
Yeah, it happens on the spiritual level too. If you evacuate your cockpit, as it's been put before, if you you don't want to face certain things and you just give that duty to something else might come in and do it. And it's kind of like, I think what demon possession is all about. And obviously there's more severe cases than others, you know. It doesn't mean you have to be like with your head spinning around and like speaking Aramaic and all this stuff. I think it could just be behaviors that we unconsciously do. You know, stuff that would be considered, I guess, escapism, could be like drug use. I mean, it could even be, you know, it's things that people look at as healthy behaviors. But it could, if you, again, going back
attachment.
To that, yeah, if you have an attachment to it or if you're so strong in it, you just can't let it go. Maybe that's mm-hmm. what's hindering you.
Yeah. And just, you know, we're probably closing up the topic, but I just wanted to say before we do, that again, we're not, you know, judging the people who are involved in these sorts of things. I mean, clearly, as Nick was saying earlier, we go through these things for a reason. We, you know, we entered into these cults either because we were born into them or because later we somehow managed to end up in one. Or we joined one because we thought it was going to be cool and the people were like us or whatever. So we don't judge. We're not saying this to be judgmental or to say we're better than anybody. I feel compassion for anyone who's in situations like that. But I also understand and comprehend that no one can save anybody. And people are in the situation they need to be in. And if they're in it and they're gung-ho and they're all in, you know, that's the experience they need for whatever reason, whether it is to grow or because they just need to be that person to another person in their life. And that's what they're supposed to do this lifetime, then that's what it is. And same goes for any cult leaders. You know, that's the role they're playing. That's the role that they decided to play this lifetime. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be friends with them, but, you know, peace be unto them and let them figure their stuff out.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Sharon, because I've, you know, I'm known as the capybara around these parts, and I'll basically be friends with anybody, and I'm not saying
or like, talk to anybody. It's like, yeah, we're not necessary. I'm like, if we have people on our show, it's not because we're like best friends with them or anything. You know, we talk to people, we allow people to share their stories, and you know, we interact with people. Didn't Jesus also interact with sinners and quote tax collectors? And they were just like, Jesus, why are you hanging out with them? It's like, well, he's like, you know, it's sick people that need a physician. Hello. It's not the people who are well.
Yeah. And that goes back to the whole echo chamber thing, right? It's like, you want to hang out with people that aren't like you. And that's what I wanted to say to add to what you were saying, Sharon, is I don't judge people either. I mean, I'll hang out with people that are in a cult if they want to go hang out. It's not like I look at them as they're a cult member or whatever. They're just a person with their own thing. I mean, I hang out with people who think that space is real all the time. You know what I mean? So
that's another cult.
Easier, you know, like that cult. It's like, all right, like I see people at NASA shirts everywhere, and I'm just like, good for you, man. You know, so.
In all serious though, like what Sharon just said, that's another cult. That's a fact. Like there are cults that you don't even think are cults. I think that a lot of things could be labeled as a cult, but people just don't label them like that. So
like people
it's a funny joke, but it's very real. Yeah, like the iPhone Android thing for real.
Yeah, it's, man. Like, people get so I used to be on the iPhone side. I was a warrior for iPhones, and then I have a
galaxy. Then you made the right decision.
Yeah, and then people with iPhones will be like, oh, you don't. And I'm like, no, I've already been there. Don't worry. I just, you know.
Yeah, it was.
I'm the same with Android. I'm like, oh, I tried. I really did. Couldn't do it. Sorry, buddy.
And who's winning, though, right? It's iPhone and Samsung.
It doesn't matter.
Apple and Samsung, right? We're basically spokesperson for free for Apple or for Samsung, right?
I do
our own relationship, but yeah, go ahead.
If you guys have a couple more minutes, I do want to make one more point real quick.
Yeah.
Just to wrap this all up. What Brandon said is 100% accurate. We're not like trying to degrade or dehumanize or devalue anybody who has been in a cult or is currently in a cult. Everybody is a human being. Everybody carries their trauma, and everybody makes very stupid decisions in this life, all of us included. I will say that a very interesting thought experiment that I did recently, because I come from a predominantly Christian background, and one of the questions that is often asked is, you know, if God is good and loving, why would he allow this to happen? And we had Sharon and I kind of touched on this in a conversation days ago, but I want to reiterate it here. I think it's a perspective question. When you look back on the events of the last 3 years that, you know, widely swept our entire world, we go, how would God allow that to happen? Because it was so evil, and it was so tyrannical. It was unknown evil, right? You had grandparents dying, unable to see their family. You know, you had people in hospitals, having babies, and husbands could not be there at the time. Just, I mean, that is ripping away so much good in this world. How would God allow that to happen? And I would pose the question, is it perhaps that these things that we see, especially if you're part of like this truth or conspiracy realm, right? You've been in this game for however many years, you go, things seem to be getting exponentially worse. And then I would pose the question, are they getting worse for a reason though? because it seems to me that humans on an individual level are getting worse, and then these scary times are getting worse as a result of it. I would say that when humans let themselves become so apathetic that they won't speak to anybody in a grocery store, like I said earlier, there is no human connection anymore. There is no genuine community. And then the community that does exist is, you know, in large part online communities, online cults that are preying on people, that are engaging in things like doxing and publicly shaming people and libel and slander and blackmail and extortion and all these things. It's a lot of evil that is taking place on a personal level within people's own hearts. And I would guess that things like, you know, the corona spell that happened are an opportunity for us to remember humanity and like compassion and empathy, to shock people on an individual level into really letting go of all of those things that are detrimental and toxic and traumatizing and hurtful to other people. And then, you know, by association, society at large, because when you hurt somebody, you're hurting society, because that person is part of society. I would say that these things are becoming worse because we're becoming worse. And I think that that's also reflected in society in general, you know, like with the transmission movement, people really like to be very cruel to people in that movement. And then there are other people who like to attribute all of its power to George Soros, who's funding all these or it's people being cruel to other people. And these wounds are so deep in these people that they go, I need somebody to see me. Anybody, please see me, because I'm drowning. I can't function. I hate my life. I need somebody to see me. So some hair gets dyed and some body parts get cut off because they're so desperate for any love. Amount of love, any amount of love. And then what is typically our response to that? Call them disgusting, call them anything except for love is what they're given. So I would say, think about that. Next time you want to join a cult, is it centered on love and helping other people and genuinely making a positive impact in this world? Or is it focused on tearing other people down? Because I think that might be the reason that we just had to endure what we had to endure for 3 years is because, I mean, you go online, message boards, threads, comment sections, you know, group chats, everything. It doesn't matter what it is. There's people tearing each other down. There's a UFC. Yep. I don't know if you guys know UFC. I watched it probably 15 years ago, but everybody knows who Brock Lesnar is. He's a freak monster of a man. His daughter just won some title in shot put or something. And there was a picture of him with his daughter and she looks like him. And I opened the comments, thousands of comments. Said, oh my God, that's a dude. You know, the apple doesn't far fall from the tree. Just like ripping on this teenage girl because she looks like her dad. Her dad is wildly successful in UFC and WWE, you know, and she's a high school girl. And I just go, I have daughters. My God, I don't know how I would be able to cope if I saw people doing that to my daughters. And then I think, you know, like my wife, we grew up in a time where the internet was still pretty new. We had like MySpace back then. Facebook wasn't even a thing, right? But like, imagine if she were on the internet, there's a picture of her on the internet, and then just thousands of people saying hurtful shit towards her. And I saw that this morning. I saw that post and I was like, this is a perfect time to see this going into talking about healing and stuff, as we really need to start extending a lot more love and compassion to people, because there's a lot of people who are really hurting. And being an asshole does not make anything better.
Absolutely. And I concur with all the things you said. The whole "if God is good" topic, you know, we could talk about that for hours. But like I can just try to make it short. And I would say that you can't have any growth without a challenge. And when things get so messy and ugly, you know, call it evil if you will, but that is a catalyst. Use it for growth. You know, that's, I'm pretty sure that's the intention. I'm pretty sure that's the point. You know, if you don't use it for growth, what are you doing? You're not healing. You're just stuck in a spiral. And hopefully maybe one day you can get out.
Any good parent does not start at 100. They don't start screaming at their child if their child does something wrong. You know, it's gentle. First it's teaching, and then it's gentle reminders, and then it's maybe a little bit more stern, and then it's a progression of poor behavior, and then whatever punishment or reprimanding has to fit that behavior. So if you think about the relationship between humans and God, it would make sense that these big things that are happening in society and in the world are getting worse because we're getting worse.
Yeah, or I would say the culture maybe is getting worse, not maybe everybody. But I know.
Yeah, definitely not every person, but just like culture, society in general. Yeah.
And as these things happen, more people wake up, I think, too, which is, it filters people.
Right. I mean, we noticed a lot of those things happening in 2020. Lots of people coming to their senses about things. And
that's that pendulum swing, yeah.
Realizing what is important.
Yep.
Yeah, and being good to people is important.
Absolutely. Love, that's one thing.
It's not a sign of weakness, despite what your cult leader might tell you. Being a compassionate person is not a sign of weakness at all.
Yeah, I think what happens, I'll throw this in quickly because I know we're about to wrap up, but it was like this with me, where I thought I was the center of the universe, even if it was subconsciously. I just looked at everything that happened or that was going to happen as, you know, how can I benefit from this? And not even maybe that maliciously, is more like, how can I have a good time? Or how am I going to stay happy with this thing? Or how am I going to be happy? What outcome, right, will make me happy? Now I kind of look at it as, you know, like, what's going to be better? What kind of like the what would Jesus thing do, right? Like, but what's going to be better for everybody? And again, you know, that whole thought can be taken out to its extreme. Then you end up with like communism or whatever, right? But just on an individual, personal level, you take it situation by situation, and just remember, you're not the center of the universe. But it's, you know, it's not that I don't understand why people have that frame of mind that think they're the center of the universe, because basically that's all they've ever known. You only know your own experience and everything around you, especially with TV and movies and everything being so prevalent. You kind of think you're like in your own movie, right? This is a movie about Brandon. How are we going to go along? But then once you realize we're all in this together, I think it helps a lot.
And in the sense of like, yeah, you do need to give yourself the attention that you need. And that's the care and the healing that you need. And that's very important. So it's not about like, oh, everybody's more important than me. So it's a balance, right?
Yeah, that's the other side of the token, right?
You're right. Self-love and healing, the appropriate healing that you need and the self-love that you need, so that you can be loving and compassionate to others. Again, because if you don't know how to do that for yourself, you probably won't know how to do it for anyone else. And you'll be doing it from a different place, not from a true place of love and compassion. You'll be doing it from a place of acceptance and validation and, you know, how am I going to get brownie points, that kind of thing.
Yeah. To bring it back to my very opening thing, where I said I liked that quote in the beginning because it created this false binary and it simplified something to make, and in the process of simplifying something, it opens up so many more doors of thought.
Mm-hmm.
What Brandon just said, where he said, we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
Was that not the slogan of the last 3 years?
Yeah, it really was.
And how much anger did that spark in people?
Yeah.
That's a very true, beautiful statement. We're in this together. Let's help each other. And the cultural response to that was anger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very, it's very telling of where we are as a culture when something that is a universal truth like that sparks such outrage in people.
Indeed.
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 All right.
Shall we put a fork in it?
Yeah, I was going to say, let's give a shout out to the chat. Thank you guys for hanging out to the end. We appreciate you so much. And you know, the best way to support us is to be here every Thursday when we premiere these or go live. Make sure you hit thumbs up, subscribe, hit the bell so you know when we put out new stuff. And you can go to morelawsmoreproblems.com if you'd like to support us even further than just hanging out here. There's several ways to support us financially there, so you can do that. And yeah, I don't know. You have anything to add, Sharon?
I think that's it. Shout out to the chat. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you for coming on again and oversharing with us. It's, even though you think you were talking too much, like Sharon and I always say, it's great because we're letting you do the work, you know. So,
well, I think we talked a lot more this time.
Yeah.
Did we
waited. Yeah, it was good though.
It was great. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was a really good balance of all these ideas. And again, we're not making claims, everybody. You know, we're trying to point out some similarities with things we've seen and lived through with what's going on and what's happened in the past and what can happen in the future, you know. So
we're all very, very good at pattern recognition here.
Yeah, that's really what it is. Yeah, exactly. Awesome. All right. Well, what else? You guys can check us out. We're on Podbean if you just want to hear this through the audio. And if you have any comments, please make sure you leave them below. And, you know, if you're going to get hateful and stuff with your comments, like we're just like, all right, because that's not what we're about here. Obviously,
Brandon has a button for that.
Yeah, I do. If you want to talk about my beautiful hair. You can talk about my beautiful hair all day, but you're going to start hating it. And the thing is, too, when people leave hateful comments, I'm just like, all right, whatever. Now I'm like, oh, I got to delete this. Like, I don't even feel.
It would be pretty ironic for someone to leave a hateful comment after what we just talked about.
Well, that would mean they probably didn't listen this far into the show, I would imagine.
No, exactly.
This is true.
Or at all.
Yeah, at all. Exactly. All right. Well, awesome. Thanks again, everybody, for checking us out. And thank you, Nick, for coming on. And thank you, Sharon, for being such a lovely co-host.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Yeah.
Happy Green Day.
Oh, yeah. We all got our green on, right? Yeah, exactly. And happy holidays, whatever you guys celebrate out there. And remember, don't ruin your family holiday just because they believe space is real. It's fine. Let them think it, you know. There's a lot of cool things out there. Maybe it is real. I don't know. I've never been there.
This episode airs right before Christmas. So Merry Christmas. Whatever.
That's it, Sharon. You're out of the cold. I told you, no Christmas. You're out.
You're gone.
It's over, Brandon.
It's over.
Oh, the one last thing I did want to say is we need somebody. So, Nick, in your background, you have the tree there. There's a light that's been flashing. We need somebody to decode it, like through Morse code, to see if it's like saying anything. The energy, yes. That'd be amazing if it was just like, you guys are so on, keep talking, or whatever.
That's so funny. Longitude and latitude to my new secret cult location.
Exactly. So if you listen this long, guys, you got the secret. You got to go look up some Morse code and decode
that's
that.
So funny.
If you figure it out, leave it in the comments. All right. What do we say to the good people, Sharon?
that once you start over Sharon,
then you totally stop being a Karen. And remember,
delayed.
And you totally stop being a Karen. I wanted to use that silence, you know, get people really into being enthralled and enthralled. Anyway, and remember, we're not trying to tell you how to live.
But maybe just to give you some ideas about how to live a little more simply, perhaps.
Exactly. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Bye. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.